Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by Cashfly.
Today on Know-How, the Internet of Things and security and privacy. Welcome to Know How,
Ellipses.
IoT, Internet of Things. I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Florence Ion.
And this is 12 weeks of everything you ever wanted to know about the Internet of Things.
Week two.
We thought we would bring out the big guns right away. Security and privacy. A lot of people just say, I don't even want any of this stuff because everything's listening to me. Everything is recording me. I don't want it. It's putting malware on my system. And I thought we could spend this time sort of going the fine line, navigating the fine line between naivete, which is let's just connect all the things to the Wi-Fi and forget about it, and FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt that everything's listening to me, everything's after me. I think there's a line we can walk this between that.
There is, and I feel like, you know, if anybody should be able to talk about it, it should be us, especially me, because I have a habit of just searching for things on Amazon and bringing them home.
Yeah.
I did, which we will get to.
Yes.
Well, you'll see it teased.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of security problems, like a lot of stuff that we hear talked about. And we will, later in the show, talk to Stacey Higginbotham, who is from Stacey IoT. She does the IoT podcast. She does This Week in Google. And she'll walk us through some of the real basics and the not-so-basic things that mm-hmm. you need to do before you buy your devices, after you've installed them, and some stuff, devices to buy and devices maybe not to buy.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get to some news. And I think this was more leaning toward the FUD than real, but it was about people buying a house where the former owner's stuff was still connected. The idea was that if you're buying a house, you should, of among the many other things, all the things you do when you're buying
water
house,
damage, yeah. termites.
Make sure that they don't have, make sure to catalog all of the devices, the smart home devices, and then make sure they're wiped. And that you have your own password. Make sure they're not connected. Or, just better yet, like just get rid of all of them.
Yeah, just smash it.
And buy new ones.
Just, you know, don't throw in the garbage. It's, like, bad for the environment. Mm-hmm. But don't leave your stuff behind.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, the idea when you, when you recycle an old phone or an old computer,
yeah.
you're supposed to wipe it. But this is sort of, I guess it could be the same thing. Like, if you bought a new house and you were like, oh, I can watch all the logs of someone's security camera. But the problem with this really is that someone's phone might be still connected, too, so they could have control over it.
Right. In that case, you might as well just buy something new.
Yeah, exactly.
Just plug it in. Start your own.
Mm-hmm. And then the other big story that made the rounds a couple of weeks ago, which was more interesting to me, was how people, domestic abusers, are using smart home devices as part of their abuse. So this was an article in the New York Times that was really interesting. I don't think anyone's keeping track of this yet or anything, but the people that are working with abuse victims say they're hearing more and more about this. People are using locks, they're using cameras, not just while they're in the relationship, but then after they leave, they're still using them to monitor.
Basically torture the person that they're trying to get to, turning the lights off and on, locking them out of the house, things like that. But what is helpful is that a lot of companies out there, like security companies, for instance, they'll offer you separate PIN codes and things of the nature. And like, if you call and let them know that you're in a situation, you know, they can help in some mm-hmm. in some instances. It's not law enforcement, but it's good to know that there is like a little bit of, there is some control if you can get to it.
Right.
It's not in all situations can you do that.
And I think one of the problems with this is that what they're finding, they didn't do a really widespread study. Nobody's done a widespread study, but in this small study, they found that all of the abuse victims in this situation that were being abused with the smart home devices were all women.
Yeah.
And many times it was a situation where the man had set up all this stuff, and she didn't have the passcode. She didn't have the app on her phone. She just either, you know, let it happen, or the relationship was such where she said, I don't want cameras in the house, and he said, too bad, or did it without her knowing. And so it's just sort of a lesson to, you know, if you're in a relationship with someone, whether, you know, it's the same way. My husband says, you know, I don't want that camera in by your bedside. Like, I don't want the little Echo look or whatever it is, the little round one. He's like, that, you know, it's enough. The other, you've done enough. That one I'm going to say no to. Yeah, it's just like, listen to, you know, to your partner who might be setting these things up, and say either, no, I don't want that, or yes, that's fine, and I get the app on my phone too, and I need the password, and I'm going to figure out how it works, and you're going to show me.
Makes me feel like we should go, you know, we should empower people with knowledge about how to take these things apart, how to unscrew doorbell locks, that sort of thing, for whenever the situation occurs.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
So, but what you said, one way of empowering him is you can talk to the device maker, right?
Absolutely.
Right? Like, and say, like, here's the situation. This is in my house. How do I get it out?
Well, and I had spent several months this year basically reviewing security systems for a client. And a lot of those instances, they asked me to set up separate PIN numbers, including words or PIN codes that you could say to the operator to let them know that you were in distress. So you could give them a specific number, and they would say, oh, that's your distress number, I'm going to call the cops, you know, that sort of thing. And I appreciate that that sort of thing exists, because it's really taking those things into consideration. But yeah, it's very unfortunate that this has, like, become a weapon in some instances.
Yes. And Nicole Lee from Engadget, our friend Nicole Lee, wrote a great piece.
She did.
About, based after this New York Times piece came out, based on what you can do, some of the things you can do.
That's where I got the tip about calling, actually. That's where I was reminded that the PIN numbers and the fact that you can set up these distress codes.
Yeah. And you can complain about it. I mean, a lot of this, as we know, a lot of this technology is made by people who haven't necessarily thought of how it can be used in bad ways. Like, I'm finding that is one of the biggest things in tech right now. Like, just people set out to have something that is going to be great, and through no fault of their own, except maybe not considering every option, which is very difficult, the thing can be used for nefarious purposes.
Yeah.
And so I know that when the Echo, the Albuquerque came out, and you could just say that, you know, call whoever, there was no way to block the phone call. Like, if anybody who was in my contacts list could automatically contact me, and in the beginning there was no way to block that. And so a woman tweeted about it and complained, and then they fixed it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one way we can do this. Just complain as loud as possible.
That's a consumer right, actually. You should definitely leave a review, complain when you can, let manufacturers know how you're feeling about their product, whatever, in whatever situation is happening. If it's not working, also let them know that.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that we need to talk about before we get to Stacey?
No, I think Stacey's got some good tips for us coming up. So I think we should dive into those.
Everything that I learned about Internet of Things security and smart home security, I learned, of course, from Stacey Higginbotham, who does Stacey on IoT and is a regular host on This Week in Google. And she's here to answer all of our questions. Thanks so much for coming on, Stacey.
Hi, Stacey.
Hi, glad to be here. And I'm not sure I'm going to get to all of your questions.
Okay.
There's a lot.
I do have a lot. But you break it down. Like, there's three elements of security that you need. The IoT hardware itself needs to be secure, the apps need to be secure, and the information that goes from the apps to the device in the cloud, that has to be secure. So tell us a little bit about more about that concept.
Okay. Sure. You did a great job. I might want to say there's four things, or there's three places and then the transport between all of them. So there's a lot of things on the physical security of the device. And so this can be anything from, like, there used to be a smart home camera that you could actually just stick a safety pin up in the camera and reset it. And if you did that, it would erase the recordings. It would just de-link it from someone's account. And if you imagine using that as a security camera, well, that's not as useful, right? So that's like physical security that you need to think about, just the device itself. Then there's the software, and that's things like, you know, does it share passwords? Does it require two-factor authentication? Like basic software security things. And then in the cloud, there's things like, hey, are you storing people's passwords in plain text? Oh, you shouldn't do that. Have you secured all of your, you know, or Amazon Web Services instances, those kind of things. And then there's the security of things going back and forth. So that's device to your perhaps router and then up to the cloud, or it could be device to the phone to the cloud. All of that should be encrypted. And then finally, you should probably have corporate policies to think about what data you need to collect and why. So maybe you don't grab everybody's Wi-Fi password because you don't really need it. So that's kind of the big thing.
Stacey, I think one of the things that I have trouble with is giving people the right kind of advice, because a lot of people out there, you know, they're not as tech savvy as maybe the rest of us, and maybe tinkering around with a router and all that sorts of stuff might be a little over their head. So, you know, I'm thinking, do you have to be a network engineer to keep this stuff secure? Is it really, can it be just as easy as like making sure that your passwords aren't the default, you know, making sure that you have two different Wi-Fi networks, one for your smart stuff and one for the regular stuff that you do in your home?
Okay, wow, that was like really easy, and then some next level crazy stuff there. So yes, the first thing you should do for everybody who wants to have more security in their IoT gadgets is to change your passwords on your devices. And actually, I take that back. The very first thing you should do is get a password manager, or to get a little notebook and write everything down. Yeah. Because you're going to have, like, I have like, I don't know, 50 some odd apps on my phone, and I can't remember all those passwords. So that's your first step. And then I would say change your router password. It's not so hard. And if you're like, oh, that's so scary, just buy a new router. Buy some of the newer routers are very user-friendly. They have, you know, they'll force you to change your password. They also have guest networks automatically set up for you, and they're going to auto-update when, like, vulnerabilities are found in Wi-Fi. So if you're serious about setting up a home, like a smart home, start with a good router. And this could be any of the modern, like Orbi from Netgear, Eero. There's so many. There's a lot.
I know Linksys too has like a really like major mesh network that's supposed to be like the best.
Yes.
Yeah.
And with that, make sure like when your kids' friends come over, put them on a guest network.
Yeah.
Or your sketchy roommate, or in my case, my sketchy brother, when he comes over, he gets the guest network.
Yeah, and don't give your Wi-Fi to your neighbors. That's like another thing, by the way, that I keep hearing. Like, oh yeah, I give my Wi-Fi password to my neighbors. Mm-hmm. Like, why?
So what about this guest network, running your devices on a guest network? We had someone email us, because last week we showed all of our devices, and, you know, I just threw IoT willy-nilly across my house. And, you know, this viewer said, I just want a Ring video doorbell. Ring is our sponsor. I don't want anything else. Can I effectively just run that on the guest network? Have you ever tried to do that?
I have. And the doorbell is actually a really prime example of where you can run into problems with that. So the challenge with a guest network in running everything on it is you're going to get some latency when your phones, because a lot of these things talk to your phones, are on another network. So in the case of the Ring doorbell, it's going to be on your guest network. That signal when the doorbell rings isn't going to go direct over the Wi-Fi network. It's actually going to go up to the cloud and then back over down to the Wi-Fi network, or down to LTE, down to the Wi-Fi network. So it's going to introduce some latency. You'll see this becoming an issue if you do a lot of geofencing. Mm-hmm. I set it up for like 3 weeks, and I felt it. I hated it. It did not work for me, but it is inherently more secure, and that's, you know, security. It's a trade-off. So mm-hmm. if you're willing to make that trade-off, set it up that way and see.
So what about, I know another rule that you have is all your devices have to get automatic firmware updates over the air. How do you know if your device does that? Like, how do you know if you're getting them?
There are definitely more convenient ways to do this. Like, a lot of them will tell you they do their updates at like 2 a.m, or they will give you the option of when to schedule them. So I always take that. But you really just kind of have to hope. So as a reporter, I like when a big vulnerability comes out, I will actually call all of the major vendors and I'm like, hey, have you updated it yet? And then I go look for that. And that gets to the kind of other piece of advice I give people, which is buy from reputable brands. Yeah. I know it sucks to pay 10 extra or 20 extra for something, but you at least know that they've got the personnel behind the scenes to actually do the updates. And if they don't do the updates, then just no. But those are also the people that reporters and stuff are going to check up on, too. We're not going to check up on random no-name brand from China to make sure they're doing their updates.
Okay, but let's say somebody does have a random no-name essential oil from China, essential oil diffuser from China in their house. What could they do to keep that secure against any possible threats or vulnerabilities? Ah, such a hard word to say out loud.
So if it's a Wi-Fi connected device, I would definitely put something like that on a secondary network. Yes. I wouldn't let that. I mean, because there's no reason for that to talk to anything else,
it's
right?
It's true. It's true. But it's extremely convenient.
I have a lot of opinions about that, starting with a connected air monitoring system I set up. And I was like, oh, essential oil diffusers, they could be really deadly for you in terms of putting pollutants into your indoor air. Just buy money. Spend your money on something higher quality, or buy something like you know, Wemo is sort of mostly legit. They do updates. Buy a connected outlet.
An outlet.
And then plug your diffuser into it.
Right.
You could call it air diffuser.
Yeah. That's what I should be doing.
So basically your advice is, instead of just searching on Amazon to find the best price for internet connected anything, look at reviews. Like, go to your site, Stacey on IoT, go and check out some of the reviews we've done, or, you know, just Google it and find a respectable person that you already trust from a, you know, respectable brand. You know, if it's not from a respectable brand, then look and see if someone's already reviewed it. And if they say, yeah, it gets over-the-air security updates, push updates, and that's great.
Yeah, and I would say for us in the tech press, it's our job to actually ask people about this. So a good example is, there was a $20 Wyze camera, and I was like, this is way too good to be true. But everyone was like, Stacey, oh my God, I want to buy this. And I'm like, well, hold on. So I called them up and I talked to them and I figured out why it's so cheap and it's okay. And I read the terms and conditions and the privacy policy just to, you know, make sure it wasn't so cheap because they were selling your nude pictures on the internet, you know? So those companies can still lie to you, and many next level people will be like, well, I'm checking to see where my packets are going, but that's way too much for normal people.
As long as you brought up the Wyze camera, I looked into it too. I didn't call them, but I definitely heard your advice about it too. Are they just doing things on the supply chain to get the price so low? How is the price so low?
Why is it so low? So they're ex-Amazon people. So their whole goal in life is to sell a ton of these things at a very slim margin. So that's one. Two, they're pulling the camera design from China. So the software and the hosting for the cloud provider is in Seattle. So everything's built and hosted in the US, but the camera comes and is OEM'd in China, and they just slap their software and whatnot on it. So that's how they're doing it. People have looked at like where the packets are going, and they're like, hey, some of them do go to China. And I asked the company about that. They were like, yeah, it's because it's made in China, but we're hosting everything. All your data is with us. And they could be lying, but at some point in time, I got to assume that they're not, because that's a terrible world to live in.
What about privacy versus security? I think we throw around the terms a lot equally, but they're really not. So how do you make your devices more private as opposed to just more secure?
Right.
Ooh, that's a fun question. So we don't have cameras in our house. I know I was talking about the Wyze, but we put that in when we go out of town, or we stick it in front of our fish tank to watch the fish go by.
When you need it, basically. So like if I'm leaving and I need to make sure the cat is getting her medicine twice a day, then that's the only time that I would plug in any cameras that I have and maybe pay for storage.
But what about the cameras that know when you're there or not? Like, there's the Lighthouse that's a sponsor, and the Nest IQ. They know, like, they know. Would you use something like that that goes off when you, that goes on
I've
only
reviewed
when you
them,
leave?
But I, no. I don't. I played with them. I think they're very cool, and a lot of people have no problems with them. I would never use them with the exception of them being in the public area of my home. So, like, there's a foyer, you know, right. when you come in the front door, I'd put that there. But I won't have it inward facing. And that's, and that's also, like, and this is something else you should think about when you install these things. Talk to your family. Make sure they're okay with it. My family isn't. And then when I have, like, my dog walker or dog sitter over, they know there's a camera in the house. And we show them where it is. And I do that because I would hate if someone was recording me without my knowledge, you know, especially inside a home. You know,
That makes me think about a couple of my gadgets around the house that do facial recognition and have recognized people. And I have to let them know, hey, I logged you into this app as a person, so this company now knows your face.
I do that with my Nest doorbell. And it is a little, I was like, because then my mom actually was like, please don't do that because I don't want Google to have my face. And I was like, well, Google doesn't actually know who you are related to your accounts. They just know that you're a quote, mom.
Yeah.
But she's adamant, and so I deleted it because she wasn't cool with it.
But all right. I guess we don't know when mom's coming over. It's just a surprise.
Well, it's sort of like the thing that, and especially like with my kids, like I always ask them now before I post a picture of them on social media. It's kind of the same thing. Like I'm putting this camera, it's facing outside. So just in case you decide to, you know, check out the neighborhood at 1 a.m., I will see you. And also
check out the neighborhood at 1 a.m.
And, you know, also this, it's you're being recognized and sent up to the cloud. So, yeah, it's just common decency, I guess.
And courtesy, I would say, too.
Courtesy, yeah. I mean, my UPS guy, he knows about it.
Yeah.
And he actually is like, hey, does that know who I am? I was like, I don't actually know who you are, but it does record you. And he's like, oh, cool. And that whole conversation was captured on video.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we could, I mean, we could talk for an entire hour about like what this massive pervasive surveillance is doing to us and our families.
It's both a philosophical and a psychological discussion, really, when you think about it, because we live in this day and age now where things that we say and our faces are recorded more often than they were, you know, maybe 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I do like the idea of just practicing common courtesy, telling people in your house and having just a general family meeting or a roommate meeting or whoever it is that's in the house and just saying, listen, this is A, B, and C, why I want to bring these things into the house. Yay, nay.
And, yeah. And ask what's important. Like my daughter for the longest time didn't want any connected device in her room. And she's 11 now and the Hue light bulb finally got to her. Amazon plus the Hue light bulb. And she's like, oh, party time. But up until then, she was like, I don't want a connected switch. I don't want anything. And I was like, that's fine. That's cool. I respect that. Mm-hmm. So, and it'll change over time. Maybe somebody's having like a hard time in their life and they're like, finally, like, get it all out. I'm done with it. Mm-hmm. And that's okay too.
Yeah. And that is an interesting point. But my daughter also changed her mind when I brought the Nano Leaf, like, connected lights. That was the thing. Like, she was like, no Alexa, no, oh, I'm sorry, I said her. We call her Albuquerque.
Yeah.
We call her Madame A. But no,
Albuquerque Go-Gurt.
Yeah. She didn't want anything. Like, she didn't want the dot. And weirdly, my boys did. They liked the idea of being able to talk to it. But then the lights, that was when it changed her mind.
Well, the Nano Leaf is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is. It's useless, but cool. I love ours. I'm like, oh.
It's like something it's you would have seen on display at Spencer's Gifts back in the day.
Yeah.
You know what
Come on. No, MoMA Design Store. That's how I justify owning it in my house. Spencer's is kind of cheesy.
Right, I know.
True. It's like, that was my generation.
But you never had to pay this much for something that you bought at Spencer's.
That's also very true.
Okay, so you wouldn't use cameras at all. Is there anything else that you absolutely would not use? Any device or any type of device?
No, I mean, a lot of people are anti Albuquerque or Madame A and Google, but I like those. So yeah, I think I'm all for everything. I even have door locks. I have, you know, like I have a Tesla. I'm like, my house is, everything's connected. So people are actually worried about my sink. So I connected my faucet. It's a capacitive touch faucet. And then I added a module that lets it talk to Madame A. And all these people were like, Stacey, that is the dumbest thing. What if it goes off and you never know and you're using gallons of water and you're out of town? And I was like, that's a really good point.
Well, do you need a water? You need something that monitors how much water you're using. I'm sure that exists, right?
I have one of those, yes.
So you're protected.
I'm protected against, I've got a layer of connected devices protecting against my other connected devices. Scary.
Okay, so yeah, tell us about that sink. I love that you tweeted out that you were putting this together, this sink, and there was so much negativity. But, I mean, it could be really, this is a topic that comes up a lot in IoT. It could be really useful for someone as an assistive technology.
Oh, yeah. No, this is, I think it's neat. Okay, so basically what you do in this is, it's actually a Prime Day deal. So if you want one, it's like $4.99 on Amazon Prime Day. So that's $500. This is not a crazy price. The actual faucet that this looks like is like $260. And then the capacitive touch that you need for it, that's like a $460 price tag. So making it connected is, and we had the capacitive touch before we had the Amazon thing. So it's not like it's expensive, but it's not all the tech. So anyway, it is cool because you can just say, hey, Madam A, ask Delta to turn on faucet. And there's like a 4-second latency, which is kind of a pain when you're turning it off. But the most that we use it for is actually when we are filling up large containers. We just stick it in there and we're like, hey, ask Madam A, or Madam A, ask Delta to dispense 4 cups of water. And then I put the pot there. I go like finish chopping my onions or do whatever. Like, is it the end of the world to turn your faucet on and off? But if you like are tired and you're saving steps or anything like that, it's nice. It's just convenient.
I kind of feel like the layman's terms help for this sort of thing is to just basically suggest do your full research before you bring anything that's connected to the house. Scour user reviews, scour media reviews, kind of look at documentation that you're getting into. I even heard basically Googling for vulnerabilities mm-hmm. with certain devices that you're bringing home just to see, like, well, what was the past history of this device that I'm bringing in? Like, what iteration is it in? It just sounds like it's not, you know, you want to bring smart bulbs in, but you have to think about all these things beforehand.
And that is true.
Yeah.
And what about someone
look for over-the-air updates.
Oh, right.
And someone who's not in this world, like, I mean, you're, you know, all three of us are constantly checking the news about this kind of thing. But if you're not, like, what do you do a year in? Like, do you recommend that people have, like, a spring cleaning sort of, let me check to make sure all my devices are mm-hmm. updates. Let me, make sure that they haven't been sold to another company that is going to do something different with my data. Like, do you recommend, what do people do, like, 6 months, a year, 2 years in?
Yeah.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that. I mean, I look for the updates. I mean, when a company gets sold, they're going to update their privacy policy. And so I open those emails and y'all, I read them and it sucks. It's very boring. it's no one likes that. So
that's the other, it's hard to tell people to read the EULA because it's like filled with all this jargon. How do you even know what it's like really saying in there if you're just,
Look for things like privacy. I look mm-hmm. for updates. I look for data retention. Is a good search term to look for. Third-party marketers is another search term that you can just use.
Those are all scary, but, scary words, actually, when you think about it.
But they're not going to. They're not going to tell you like, "Hey, we store our passwords in a secure hashed manner." They don't actually go that deep. So those things you don't know, and that's kind of freaky. Like, they're working on NIST standards. ISO has a standard. UL has a standard they're mm-hmm. trying to get. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing right now. So if you're really worried about that, or maybe you're like a drug kingpin and you want privacy, maybe you don't get this stuff.
I mean, if you're a drug kingpin, honestly, you should not be bringing all these connected devices into the house. Yeah. Like, just live with the one light bulb you've got in the warehouse that you're using. That's all I'm saying.
I was going to say, they're Control 4, Insteon, like, or Savant, some high-end system that someone puts together for them. That's
Right.
Of course, that's how the FBI gets into your house. Never mind.
Great use of drug money.
We digress. So do you have any like homemade IoT stuff? Like, do you use a Raspberry Pi or like any open source stuff? Have you dabbled in that in your house?
I have. Right over there, I have a Pine 64 running OpenHAB. And it is super fun and super nerdy and like a pain in the butt. So I don't recommend that for like normal people. This is not what your mom's going to do or even your dad. Even my dad, and he's a double E.
I mean, honestly, I don't really want to do it either. It's just so much work.
But is it rewarding? Like once you've gotten it all working.
That's a good question.
Oh my gosh. I spent like after putting OpenHAB in, I spent like 2 hours crafting an exact lighting scheme because I could go so granular. And then I was like, what was I wasting my life on? I did like a dinner party scene that, was it beautiful? I thought so. But
did I
really need to do it? No.
No, you did.
I have other things.
You did. You needed to have the right lighting because I know I'm the same. I need to have the right lighting for the movies. I need to have the right lighting for the friends over. I need to have the right lighting to read. I need to have the right lighting to have serious discussions with my husband.
See, and this is the road you go down, and then your whole life is done. You've got nothing left to do. Oh, this is why lights just had on and off.
Yeah.
Well, I'm always inspired by what you do. Like, you have all these IFT things that you do, like when your website publishes, a light goes off, and like all that kind of stuff. I'm always inspired by that. Is that stuff worth it?
Yes, it is. So I love it. I love that. So I was really excited originally about IoT because of the ambient information. I mean, we're in an information heavy industry. So it was nice to be like, I can go away from my computer and like, I know when I need to come back to it. So I had like a bat phone for my editor. He would, when he sent me a text message, you know, all my lights would turn, I think it was red or flash or something. And it was great because like, I didn't have to be at my computer all day. I could go down and like, you know, start dinner or something. But if something happened, he could totally get me, right? That was great until like my publication GigaOM, when it went under, like we were texting like mad. And my husband was like, oh my God, turn that off. It is so irrelevant now. So, and that's the thing you've got to think about. You've got these things, you set them up and sometimes you forget about them. And then they're like, I had a light that my husband... It's an outlet. It's by my husband's bedside table. And it turns on every time the weather gets above 90 degrees. And I could not for the life of me figure out, A, why it was turning on. B, what recipe I did, like what controlled it. I figured out why it was why it was turning on, because it used to be plugged into a fan. So that made sense. But I can't figure out where I created this. And I've got like 6 different software programs running all throughout my house. So it just turns on when it's above 90 degrees and we just live with it.
I had the same thing happen. I set my lights to turn on when the sun set. So it was set to, you know, that makes sense, right? The sunset, you need lights now. But inevitably it would be always when the family was gathered on the couch to watch TV and wanted it dark, and all of a sudden the lights would go on, and it was never exactly the same time. And my family was like, I know this is something you did, Mom, and I don't exactly know what it is, but you need to make it stop. So I figured it out. And yeah, that's the fun part. These are the stories we'll remember later.
I mean, torturing our families with turning the lights off and on when they're home alone. Because you just want to give them a scare.
Or turning them all off when you leave. We've left babysitters like in the dark because we geofenced everything to our phones and we didn't think about that.
Yes.
I did that with security systems that were using geolocation. Every time I'd leave the house, the cats would come in and it would turn off the alarms and it would just be like complete chaos. Why do you have so many alarms? Well, you see, I do this for a living, et cetera, et cetera.
I just tell people I'm crazy now.
I've started doing that. I just tell people, like, it's a hobby. I don't know. And it is a hobby now. Like, I go to Best Buy and I'm like, I got some money. Should I get another bulb?
Yeah.
I really should stop.
It's a hobby or an addiction. You know, whichever.
Listen, I'm supporting the economy.
Yeah. Stacey, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Stacey on IoT has reviews of tons of stuff. The review about the connected faucet is up there, and we'll link to that. We'll also link to an article, which is the IoT that Stacey has loved, so you can check that out.
And Stacey has a podcast as well.
Stacey on IoT. with Kevin Topol.
And a newsletter.
Oh, it's called the IoT Show.
It's right. The Internet of Things podcast.
Yes, with Kevin Topol. And it's great. So, yeah, we definitely subscribe to that, too. Anything else? Any other place we should point people?
No, that's great. Stacey on IoT is the website, and the Internet of Things podcast is the podcast.
Thank you. And please thank your dog, too. It looks like she's taking a nap down there now.
She's calmed down.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. We got some feedback.
We did.
Yes. Bob from St. Charles wrote to us. Thank you so much, Bob. We want to hear your feedback. Just send it directly to me, Megan at twit.tv, or send it to Flo on Twitter, Oh That Flo, or send it to me on Twitter, Megan Maroney. Bob from St. Charles writes, I'm borderline disabled, and I love the Ring doorbell for answering the door from my iPhone. It's frustrating when the bell rings when I'm in the basement or bedroom, and by the time I hobble to the door, whoever was there has already left. With the Ring, I can see who is at the door and tell them to be patient. The whole of IoT is great for those who have trouble moving around. So as I mentioned before, Ring is our sponsor, but that's something that it is, all of this is a trade-off. Like a lot of people, you know, it might be a real privilege to be able to say, I'm not going to have any of those devices in my house because they're listening to me and they're watching me. But for assistive technology, they're great. And so thank you, Bob, for pointing that out, that the Ring and, you know, other doorbells, I'm sure. And there's a lot. I mean, we'll be talking about this all throughout the next.
I was going to say, or if you have debilitating anxiety and just like, or you're just having an incredibly difficult day, which, you know, Flo can speak to, and you just don't want to see people, just leave the package at the door, please. You know, it's a convenience factor. It becomes a part of life. And so you don't feel weird doing it when you have to do it.
And now for the segment that we're calling What? I just said
What?
IoT What? So you have this device that you've been dying to tell us about, and you've already kind of told us about several times.
Okay, well, Stacey told me that I need to chuck it out the window, so now I've got to chuck it out the window. But yes, I found this very affordable $20 essential oil diffuser that has all sorts of colors. Now, I can't control it here at the Twit Studios because it's connected to my home Wi-Fi. But, oh, look at that. It's like a blue. So at home, this is purple. And I, of course, love a lavender smell. So that's what I brought with me today, is a lavender oil so that, you know, we can. So the thing about this is it works with Google Assistant and Albuquerque. So I love that I can basically use my voice to turn this on. Not only that, but because I use Google Homes at home, I can put this into a routine through the Google Home app. And then when I start my day in my office, I have this wonderful essential oil smell that's being misted throughout.
Oh.
I put a lot of lavender in there, so it's going to be very, very potent. But yeah, now my room is just, and I have like a lot of purple and yellows, so I have like a nice color scheme going on. I've got a Hue Bloom in there as well that kind of like lights up the, so I have this nice workspace. But now I think what I need to do is retire this and go get my unconnected essential oil diffuser and connect it to one of the many TP-Link outlets I have at home. And just doing it that way.
Couldn't you just disconnect that, or are you going to return it to Amazon?
No, I mean, it's
so, but couldn't you just disconnect it so that it's no longer Wi-Fi connected and then use it in a smart plug?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
what I guess saying. I could do that.
Instead of buying a new one.
Ah, that's true. And then I would have the pretty colors that come with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an, I mean, this one was $20, so it wasn't like you made a huge
on Prime,
investment.
Baby. And the app doesn't seem like, it doesn't seem like a bad app. Like, it seems like, oh, okay, but it's definitely not like a brand I've ever heard of before.
Yes.
I did the show.
So everything that we said not to do, you did.
I did.
You just went, you saved some money. And but yeah, but that was a good advice for connected to the smart plug so that you have the control, but you're not a known smart plug.
Yeah. But I didn't even know this existed on Amazon until I did a little search for it. And so it was just interesting to see like what's out there. And of course, there's a security element to this, but Megan and I are here to do this stuff for you so that you don't have to do it. We're the guinea pigs.
Right.
So this is what I did. You don't have to copy me.
Mm-hmm.
You can find a non-connected one that also has like 20 different colors and does the same thing and has a timer and then just add it to like a $14 outlet. From TP-Link.
And it should be noted that it is physically safe. So someone couldn't like put like some kind of sarin gas in there or something and then
it could... and actually, you know, this like
I mean I could
oh, I shouldn't do that actually. No one's going to, and also this thing shuts off after an hour. It never goes on for more. I think 3 hours is the maximum that it does on its own without the app. So I kind of appreciate that.
Okay. I think Stacey had some sort of health issues with it too, like which I've heard, like the essential.
If you use bad, don't use bad essential oils.
Okay.
Yeah. If you use bad essential oils in these things, you got to use tried and true products. There's a lot of fakes out there.
Yeah.
But I bring this here because it's important to note as well in the world of connected stuff is that there's a lot of fakes out there. I think I'm killing Burke with this, by the way. I hear him hacking along in the corner.
If we need to get rid of him.
I don't know. It smells good to me, so I'm going to enjoy this.
Okay, if you want a link to buy this super dangerous essential oil diffuser.
From some company I've never heard of.
Go to twit.tv/KH. That's how you can find the link to that and all of the things that we've talked about, all the links to Stacey's articles, all of the links to the articles that we talked about. And if you want to subscribe, also go there, twit.tv/KH, and subscribe to, it's turning red.
Now it's turning rainbow colors.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I did something. I don't know. It's a green now, and now it's going to go into a blue.
Follow us on Google Plus. Follow the know-how on us on Google Plus because we're reading your feedback and we're seeing all your great projects and we've definitely heard you. You guys are interested in more maker IoT stuff and we are gonna
That's coming up. We had to talk about security today because anybody who's looking to get into the smart home needs to know what they're up against. But again, you don't need to be a network engineer to protect yourself against this stuff, which is why we wanted to give some bare bones 1s, 2s, and 3s that you should sort of, keep track of.
Right. And I'm Megan Maroney on Twitter.
And I'm Oh That Flow on Twitter.
And we also have to thank our internet-connected TD, Burke.
Thank you, Burke.
Thank you.
For breathing in all these essential oils.
He pushes the buttons based on his messages from the cloud.
And we push his buttons as well.
And that's it. We'll see you next Thursday. We record this show when we feel like recording it. But can get it on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific time. And that's all. We'll
see you next week. And that's all, folks.
I thought you were
going to
say that.
That's all, folks.